Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. Today, we're on podcast number 70, Books That Go Together, number 5. We've been looking at characters and stories that are so big you can't tell the story in just one novel. We've looked at the Nighthawk series by Jerry Minshew, the story of an American superhero, Michael Weber. We've talked about Danny Wilson, the story of the boy and the man with an extra lobe in his brain. This allows him to read the subconscious thoughts of those around him. But today we're not looking at a single character like Michael or Danny. We're going to look at a family, the Warren family. This story involves 5 books, 3 of which I've had the pleasure to produce for author Regina Puckett. Regina is a prolific award-winning author from Middle Tennessee who writes in multiple genres. I've recorded, like I said, 3 of her sweet romance offerings, 5 of her poetry books, but she also writes horror novels, and I've recorded one of the little horror stories, steampunk novels, and even some children's books. Today, we're going to focus on the first 2 books in the Warren family series, Concealed in My Heart and Songs That I Whisper. The first book, Concealed in My Heart, introduces us to Charity, a college student who has been chosen from her college drama stage to appear in a major motion picture with the heartthrob star, David Warren. Just the fact that she is an unknown and will appear with a major star sets the press ablaze. And of course, they challenge her in every way possible.
Millions of dollars are invested in these huge productions by people who expect to make a substantial profit once the movie is released. You have absolutely no professional experience whatsoever. Do you really believe you have enough talent to make this film a success?
While her drama classes hadn't included instructions on how to handle impertinent journalists, she had been raised never to back down from a fight. She squared her shoulders, smiled, and returned the reporter's blunt stare. Her father's favorite saying came to her mind in this brief moment. "Smile, my dear. Your friends will love you all the more for it, but it will drive your enemies crazy. When they discover they can't get under your skin, they'll get bored and leave you alone." Charity had inherited her grandmother's Irish temper, so while she was smiling, she was also mentally plotting the reporter's gruesome death.
"While I don't mind you questioning my abilities, I do take great offense at you insinuating that Mr. Bennett didn't know what he was doing when he hired me. He has a proven track record of only signing the most talented people in the industry. He believes I'm ready to co-star in this film. That should be all you need to know regarding whether or not I'll be able to live up to the investors' expectations."
She had to shut her eyes against the onslaught of cameras flashing. Just as she had almost blinked away the bright white spots from her vision and was able to see again, someone stumbled into her, almost knocking her down the steps. The crowd had separated her from her mom and Mr. Bennett. One minute they had been exiting the airport lobby, and the next thing she knew, she was being surrounded by this crowd of over-eager reporters. Mr. Bennett's rich baritone laugh rang above the loud chatter of the media surrounding them both. It was a relief to hear, and a good sign he was satisfied with how she was handling the mob. The twitch above her right eye stopped, and after a moment or two, she finally relaxed her wrought iron stance. At 5'0", Charity had always been small, and had learned at an early age to take up for herself. But this was the first time another adult had tried to bully her. Her short stature, big green eyes, red hair and freckles may have given the reporters a false impression that she was nothing more than a wilting flower. But she had never been a pushover. While her defiant answer may have went over well with Mr. Bennett, it only served to stir up the crowd even more. Soon questions were being fired from all directions, but instead of letting the chaos befuddle her, Charity focused on the hawk-eyed guy leaning directly into her face. Bits of saliva hit her chin every time he spoke, repulsing her. But she continued to hold her own and stand firm. He could have been mistaken for a true Texan with his faded jeans and Western-style shirt, except for the heavy New York accent that gave away his northern roots. The Texan in disguise took advantage when she made eye contact.
"David Warren is one of the most popular leading men in the movie industry today. Do you think you might be outclassed? Tennessee isn't exactly the movie capital of the world."
Charity just barely managed to keep the irritation out of her voice. "I hope you're not insulting my home state. You obviously haven't done your homework very well if you don't know about all the talented people who were born in Tennessee and have succeeded in the movie industry. You make it sound like we're a backwards group of people. Nothing could be further from the truth. As far as working with David Warren, I'm looking forward to it." The reporter accepted her challenge and leaned in even closer. He shot back, "That might be true, but do you really think he feels the same way about working with you?" It had been very naive of her to believe that saying goodbye to her new husband was going to be the worst thing that happened to her that morning. The faces in this crowd were a strange combination of leers and amusement. But instead of letting that put a dent in her self-confidence, Charity took a deep breath and jutted out her chin. "You should ask David Warren about his feelings, not me."
Now, if you think this plotline is going to quickly become a lurid romance between Star and Ingenue, Regina will keep you thinking. You see, Charity has married Johnny, her high school sweetheart, and David is married to Maria. And David and Maria and Charity become fast friends. In fact, David and Maria join Charity and her parents in their home in Tennessee for Christmas. And it's while they are there that Maria gets sick and has to visit the emergency room.
It took David and Maria 30 minutes to get checked in at the reception area. After the receptionist had all the information she needed, she sent them into the waiting area to wait for their turn. For over an hour, David pretended to read an old magazine while peeking over its edge every now and then to see how Maria was doing. Maria and Charity pretended not to see his concern, but sat and tried chatting over the room filled with children playing, coughing, crying, and sometimes all three at the same time. Everyone there wore the same look, and it spoke volumes. This was not anyone's first choice of how they would have liked to spend Christmas. When a nurse finally called Maria back to the exam rooms, David got up to go with her. Maria stood but motioned for him to stay seated. "You don't have to go. I will be fine." He stood anyway and took her arm. "I'm sure you will be fine, but I'm going back with you. I want to hear what the doctor says." He turned to Charity. "I hate leaving you here by yourself. I hope you don't mind." Charity waved them on, reached over, and picked up his discarded magazine.
"I'm fine. I'll still be here when your exam is over. Now go on."
Time came to a complete standstill after David and Maria disappeared into the examining rooms and there was no one left to talk with. She had read every magazine and was eyeing the children's books when David and Maria finally emerged from behind the sliding double doors. It was impossible to tell from the looks on their faces if the news was bad or not. Charity stood, grabbed her coat, and then walked over to them.
"Are you ready to head back to the house?"
David helped Maria put her coat on, and she tried apologizing for the long wait.
"Yes, I'm sorry we've ruined Christmas for you." Charity was quick to reassure them. "You didn't do anything of the sort."
They all headed out to the parking area. Charity was dying to ask what the doctor had said, but she waited, hoping one of them would tell her. It wasn't until everyone was seated in Charity's compact car that David finally spoke. "They ran a few tests and discovered Maria's blood pressure is too high." He leaned forward with his head situated between the two front seats. He had a worried expression, but was also smiling. "They also said, we're going to be parents." Charity snapped around in her seat with a huge smile.
"That's wonderful." Maria leaned forward so her head was side by side with David's. She was smiling ear to ear and showed none of the concern that he was.
"This is the best Christmas ever. After so many years of trying, we're going to have a baby. I guess I gave up and just put the thought out of my mind that we ever would. Let's get back and celebrate."
Charity leaned forward and in quick succession kissed both of them. All three of them sat there and grinned for several minutes before Charity finally turned around and started the car. When she was backing the cart out of the parking space, she saw David's concerned expression in the rearview mirror. He met Charity's eyes, shared in that moment a look of deep worry, and his need for his friend to understand his grave look. She wondered what his concern was all about, but refrained from asking anything. One look at Maria, and it was impossible to feel anything but happiness. She was glowing with joy from the knowledge she and David were going to have their first baby.
We're listening to excerpts from Regina Puckett's Concealed in My Heart, the first of the Warren family books. Later in this book, this baby is born. It's a girl. She's named Suzette. And through circumstances, which I will not enumerate here, Charity has a huge role in raising Suzette. One of my favorite scenes in the book involves Suzette and Charity on the beach.
Right after breakfast, Charity stripped Suzette down to just a diaper, then stuffed a couple of beach towels in her bag of beach toys. With that taken care of, she then ran into her bedroom and slipped on a fiery red one-piece swimsuit. Before heading out the door, she slung the bag over one arm and then picked Suzette up with the other. The two of them settled into their favorite spot, about 20 feet from the house and a safe enough distance from the water so they wouldn't get wet.
The moment all of the toys were scattered within arm's reach, they both began digging with gusto into the sand. A few minutes into the fun, Suzette crawled over and climbed into Charity's lap. The sand-covered baby planted a long, sloppy, wet kiss somewhere between Charity's chin and mouth. It was the type of a kiss only a baby could get away with, and the receiver think it was the sweetest thing ever. It was long and filled with lots of slobber. Charity wrapped both of her arms around Suzette's waist and gave her a ferocious hug. During this lovely exchange, she had no idea they were being watched from the beach house's deck by the one person who never left her thoughts. Just as soon as all of the grimy affections had been exchanged, Suzette crawled out of Charity's arms and right into the center of the sandcastle. With a giggle and several hand smacks, she knocked down everything Charity had worked so hard at building. Charity began half-heartedly trying to salvage the demolished pile of sand. It was a little game they enjoyed playing every day. When Suzette knocked it all down a second time, Charity threw both hands in the air and began laughing. Suzette turned her head to see what she was laughing at. The quizzical expression on her face was Charity's undoing. Charity leaned forward and pulled her into a big hug. "You're too cute for your own good, baby girl. I love you to pieces. I really do." Suzette patted the side of Charity's head, and with each pat, more sand was deposited into Charity's face. When Suzette leaned in with another long, sloppy kiss, Charity began tickling her. They were both so busy laughing, it took several minutes before Charity finally noticed someone was standing over them. The moment she noticed, she glanced up, gasped, and hugged Suzette even tighter in her arms as if she needed her protection. David knelt next to them, and since Suzette wasn't used to being around strangers, she snuggled her face into the curve of Charity's shoulder. Every now and then she would peep out to see if he was still there. When he saw how afraid she was of him, a hurt expression fleetingly crossed his face, but he quickly replaced it with a gentle smile. He reached over and touched the back of Suzette's head. "She has her mother's eyes." At first, Charity was too surprised to speak, but she soon regained her voice and composure. Suzette looked up to Charity for reassurance with the very eyes David had so calmly mentioned.
"Yes, she does. They're beautiful."
He could only hold eye contact for a few seconds before he broke it. He casually glanced around at the mounds of sand. I see the two of you have been very busy this morning. Charity wasn't about to let him get away with trivialities. He had way too much to account for. Are you home for good? He lowered his lashes, too ashamed to hold her intense stare any longer.
Yes.
I thought it was about time I stopped behaving like a child.
So it seems that David has been up to something. What, you may ask? Ah, you must read or listen to the book. It's Concealed in My Heart by Regina Puckett. Check my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books, and click on the books icon to find more information and even some more samples. The Warren Family series next featured a story of the grown-up Suzette in Songs That I Whisper. Suzette is an artist with a studio and gallery in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. She is commissioned to paint the portrait for an album for an up-and-coming country music star, Seth Black. Seth's father had a reputation, and while Seth is trying to make his own way, the son's reputation is a little like his father, justified or not. As you might guess, there are romantic sparks between Suzette and Seth. Here's the scene where they meet.
Seth turned to Suzette and offered his hand. When she held hers out, he engulfed it into both of his own. She gave him a head-to-toe scan, and instead of being intimidated by his large, muscled frame, she returned his handshake with a firm and sure grip of her own. When he seemed to hang on to her hand a little too long, she smartly withdrew it.
"Beverly said you're interested in having your portrait painted for your next album cover."
He flashed his famous lopsided grin before saying,
"I'm sorry if I keep staring. I swear this isn't the first time I've been allowed out in public by myself, but for some reason I was expecting a little old gray-haired lady. Beverly said you had years and years of experience painting portraits. Normally when someone has years and years of experience, there's some gray hair to show for it."
Suzette headed toward the other side of the room and motioned for him to follow.
"Hope you don't think I'm being rude, but I'm really busy. Could we talk as I work?"
Suzette stopped at a stack of paintings. Seth followed her.
"I don't mind. I can help you if you need an extra pair of hands."
"It seems I could use them since my helper appears to be taking a nap."
Together they glanced over at Bill. He didn't budge an inch, but could be heard snoring from clear across the room. She shook her head and turned back to the paintings as if unconcerned. As she sorted, she divided her attention between the paintings and Seth.
"My parents gave me my first art set when I was 4. I think I may have painted the walls as much as I did the canvases, but I was only 4 after all."
She met his eyes and smiled. It was clearly infectious, for he immediately returned it. She was very charismatic.
"I didn't begin painting professionally until I was 12.
Seth loved her hands. They were so delicate without appearing too fragile.
"You waited that long, huh?"
She looked up from her sorting, and when she saw he was just joking, she chuckled.
"I would have started sooner, but my parents were very protective. To be quite honest, I threw a temper tantrum till they agreed."
She rolled her beautiful sky-blue eyes.
"I was such a brat. 4 years ago I purchased this gallery, so I now prefer representing other artists. When I paint now, it's mostly for my own pleasure, but every once in a while I will take on a project if it interests me. I told Beverly I wasn't sure if I would do your portrait or not, but after talking with her, I got the feeling she's a very determined, headstrong lady."
Seth laughed as if that was an understatement.
"She has been called that, among other things."
Suzette stopped what she was doing long enough to turn and face him.
"Beverly doesn't have the market on headstrong. In the end, it will be my decision if I take the commission on your portrait or not."
Seth admired Suzette's confidence.
"I would never dream of pressuring you. I only asked for an opportunity to tell you about my plans for the new album cover, and then you could decide whether to do it or not. Beverly says that you're the best, and I value her knowledge on such matters."
While Suzette had been surprised to find a stranger in her gallery so early in the morning, she was even more astonished by her immediate attraction to the ruggedly handsome man. He had a humble demeanor with a huge dash of sexiness thrown in for good measure. She couldn't remember the last time she had found another man so attractive. She usually liked looking people in the eye when she was talking with them, but he had such beautiful hazel eyes that they made her lose track of what he was saying. Instead of looking at him, she had to find something else to do, so it wasn't obvious how flustered she had become. But even though she had already flipped through the stack of paintings at least three times, she couldn't remember what any of them looked like. To give the appearance Seth Black hadn't scrambled every one of her brain cells, she began placing the paintings along each wall at the places she would have Bill hang them later.
"I'm not certain that I'm such a good choice to paint your portrait. Before I do one, I like to have a good understanding about the person I'm working with. Beverly said yesterday that you're a country music singer. Even though I was born and raised in Tennessee, I've never listened to that genre of music before."
He held up one of the paintings and waited for her approval. "Country music focuses more on life and relationships than any of the other genres. We're not afraid of putting our hearts into every song we write and sing." Absent-mindedly, Suzette began making the cute little clicking noises again. She also had a funny way of bobbing her head back and forth when she was deep in thought. After a moment of clicking and bobbing, she stood completely still and silent. She then smiled, its brilliance almost making Seth drop the painting. He silently had to remind himself he was there on business and had no intention of getting entangled with anyone at this time in his life. He had been a victim of his own father's messy life and the trouble it had caused everyone who loved him. Over the years, Seth's mother had tried to escape the pain by drinking herself into a stupor. It had been sad watching a woman squander her love on a man who could only love himself. Seth had always thought he would stay free of love's trap. As far as he could tell, it only led to heartbreak in the end. Growing up under the cloud of his father's womanizing ways and drug addictions, it had been hard to see that the life his father had lived was wrong. After his dad's death, Seth had decided he would never live his life in a way that would ever hurt another person. Even when he decided to go into the music business like his father, he made a conscious decision to stay away from all of the temptations fame brought with it. Women were on the very top of his list of things to stay away from. One look at Suzette, and there was little doubt that she would be able to sidetrack him if he let her. He couldn't afford to let that happen.
That's from the second book in the Warren Family series by Regina Puckett, Songs That I Whisper. We see this romantic tug-of-war which has been set up for the story, and it will continue through much of the book. Not only that, but there's a mystery thrown in. Someone is claiming to be Seth's brother, a brother he didn't know about, and presents a danger to him. The brother attacks Seth, landing him in the hospital.
Seth smiled and motioned for her to move closer. She got as close as the bed railing would allow and took his hand. It was reassuring to find it wasn't as cold as it was before. That gave her hope. It took a couple of tugs, but she was finally able to lower the bed railing so she could press her lips onto his. She almost fell into the bed with him when he grabbed a handful of her hair and tugged. She was surprised when he placed his hand on the back of her head and kissed her with far more force than his weakened state should have made possible. She leaned back to see him give her a cheeky grin.
"Are you all right?" Suzette asked. "What happened? Was it your brother? Why didn't you let me go with you, Seth? You just about scared us to death."
He pulled her back to him and kissed her protesting mouth again. His voice was still weak when he finally let her go. "One thing at a time, okay?" He cautiously raised a hand to his head. He had a confused look on his face.
I was going to ask you why my head hurts so much, and it feels like someone's sitting on my chest. Suzette held his hand in hers and asked, "You don't know what happened?" He gave her hand a weak squeeze. "No. The last thing I remember is leaning on the tailgate of my pickup. It was getting late, and I was considering just heading back to Murfreesboro when something slammed into the back of my head." Walker and Connie came back over. Seth looked over at them, not sure whether Suzette had told them anything yet. Connie patted his shoulder and scolded him at the same time. "Why didn't you tell me, Seth?" When Seth looked over at Suzette, she explained. "I told them everything I knew. Your mother was so worried, and the police were here questioning her about why you'd been in the garage so late." Seth briefly closed his eyes, but then only said, "I'm tired." Suzette leaned over him. "Didn't you see who did this?" "No. He must have come up from behind me. I never saw anything." Connie asked, "What do we tell the police?" He grimaced as if suddenly in a lot of pain. "Don't tell them anything. I'll talk to them after my brain is a little clearer. I can't think straight now." This time it was Connie who was the stronger of the two. "Don't worry about it. You go back to sleep and get some rest. We'll take care of everything." As if that was all he needed to hear, he closed his eyes and was soon breathing deeply. Connie looked at Suzette and Walker. "What do we do? We can't let the police think Seth was in that garage buying drugs. But if we tell him what he was doing there, he'll never forgive us." Walker scratched his unshaved face in thought. His voice was tired as he answered, "I guess we do what he wants us to do. We don't have much choice. We'll just stall until Seth decides what he wants to do. It shouldn't be hard. He's under medication for the pain. Maybe it wasn't his so-called brother that stabbed him. He could have run across a mugger in that garage. He was still all dressed up from the award show. Someone might have thought he had a lot of money on him. Seth will be better tomorrow. We'll see then what he wants to do when he's more alert." He turned to Suzette. "Do you know what he did with those notes?" She shrugged. "I saw him shove the last into a pocket of the jacket he was wearing last night. I don't know if he kept the other ones or not." Walker looked around the room, searching for Seth's jacket. He opened all the cabinets and drawers, but found nothing. He finally asked Connie, "What'd they do with his clothes?" She gave a blank stare before shrugging. "I was so worried about him, I never thought to ask. They must have his wallet, because they used the emergency contact card he has in it to call me." Walker headed towards the door. "I'm going to see what I can find from the nurses at the desk. Someone must have his stuff. With that note, Seth can at least show the police that he had a good reason for being there. They might wonder why he didn't call them instead of coming by himself, but at least they won't think he was up to no good."
We have a mystery and an on-again, off-again love affair and questions which require that you read or listen to the book to find the answer. Check out Songs That I Whisper by Regina Puckett. You can go to my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books. These books, Concealed in My Heart and Songs That I Whisper, are the featured books on the top of my page. Click on the book icons for more information as well as more samples. Next week, we'll continue looking at these books on the Warren family, including the latest offering. It's entitled Love's Great Plan. That's our time for this week. I invite you to contact me if you wish. You can email me by clicking the Contact Me link on my website. It's narrationbygeorge.com. Or like me on Facebook. I'm just Narration by George over there. And on Twitter, you can follow me at Narration by Geo. So join me again next week when this podcast will again be new. In the meanwhile, God has blessed you. Share that blessing with someone else. See you next week.